theater called KABU at the Clinton. This month, we'll screen the film Behemoth on Thursday, July 12th at 7 p.m. Behemoth is a Chinese documentary showing the dehumanizing impact of coal mining. After the film will be a discussion on clean energy alternatives. Again, that's a film screening of the documentary Behemoth, Thursday, July 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Words and Pictures. We reprise a 2005 conversation with celebrated Portland cartoonist John Callahan ahead of Gus Van Sant's new film, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. KABU programming is made possible by KABU member listeners and support from Portland Saturday Market, 45 years of handmade arts and crafts, freshly prepared international foods and local music in downtown Portland. Featuring live music and kids' corner events, Portland Saturday Market every Saturday and Sunday in Waterfront Park, now through Christmas Eve. Event schedule, vendor information, and more online at PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Portland native John Callahan apparently never got the memo about our city's well-known politeness. I'm S.W. Conser, and I remember Callahan as a gleeful butcher of sacred cows, and one of the most controversial cartoonists to visit Bill Dodge and me on the Words and Pictures show. John's quadriplegia kept him close to home in northwest Portland, but his work was published in newspapers around the world, and he became the subject of Dutch filmmaker Simone de Vries' 2007 documentary, Touch Me Someplace I Can Feel. John Callahan died on July 24th, 2010, at the age of 59, but he has now been immortalized in the Gus Van Sant feature film Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, starring Joaquin Phoenix. Bill and I visited John a number of times over the years, but our first radio visit in 2005 is quite possibly the most memorable, taking place in John's favorite coffee shop on Northwest 21st Avenue. Everyone's your friend.
The rain, it seems, was just a dream. The following program contains language which may be offensive enough to knock a buzzard off a sheep wagon.
You're listening to Words and Pictures on KABU with S.W. Conser, that's me, and Bill Dodge. Our guest today is legendary Portland cartoonist John Callahan.
This is a poem called Puppets Pray. The horn, the hoof, the hook, the ragged claws come to mind. The hump, the stump, the milky eyes straining in vain, the cane that taps the truth to the crapshoot god, the tin star god, the pimp, the cheat, the lump of meat beneath the sheet, the golden slab, the foreign flab, the twisted freak that makes the heat for the goose flesh god, the cool whip god, sweet god of pins and needles, of trace and spark, the puppet praying in your heart, cyanide, suicide, a place to hide the broken vase, the melted face, the basket case, a way to kill without a trace, a place to chase the human race.
How I miss the deep blue sea, deeper than a dolphin's dream, bluer than a blue whale seems. In a salty sailor's dreams, the boys are dancing on the cakes, their striped shirts, their wooden legs, the captain's lady still ashore. Got stuck when he shut the drawer. We'll scuttle those mates and swallow their swill. Feed the rest to the sharks for drill. Life is rough and life is hard. Might as well play the mutiny card. Bills our arms up to row the is D, all the way back to the queen and king. We'll write a book and avoid the jails, leave out a few minor details.
Espresso machine.
Oh.
Yes.
The espresso machine is landing.
I see. And so I wrote a song called Summer Never Ends about a near-death experience that I had. And my songs are kind of like Morrissey meets Leonard Cohen. Without the
finesse. That's upbeat.
Yeah, I know.
So, and John, you mean you've had more than one near-death experience?
Well, I've had many. Having one right now.
What are some of your favorites? Ones that have been most transformative?
I wrote a song called, they wrote about it in Willamette Week last week, about Touch Me Someplace I Can Feel. That it's not really a funny song, it's really kind of, it's like, you know, the words are like, you know, broken veins and broken needles, I'm too tired to make a fist, Charlie Manson sings the Beatles, I should have known it would end like this, stick it deep and light my candle, help yourself to my last meal, I've had all that I can handle. Touch me someplace I can feel. It goes on. It's got prettier chords than you think. It's got prettier tune. It's serious lyrics, but it's got really pretty jazzy, almost minorly jazzy chords. And it's sort of a straight line melody.
Have you been writing songs your whole life?
Yeah,
or is this
really
a new thing?
Yeah, okay. I've been doing all my. But I just haven't really. You know, Kiki Friedman now is. I'm doing his new book.
Kiki Friedman, the Texas Jew.
Yeah, yeah. So he's running for Texas governor right now. But he's writing a book called Texas Hold, called, what's that card name? Is it called Texas Hold?
Yep.
He's writing a book called Texas Hold, which I'm illustrating. Actually, I flunked out, was fired from the book before this by Kiki because I couldn't draw the illustrations to suit him. I'm a very crummy illustrator. But as a cartoonist, you know, and in this book, he's just choosing cartoons that fit. Although I drew a picture of Willie in him. So, anyway, long story short, instead of getting paid for the book, Kiki is going to push my song to different people. So
he's doing kind of a cover version of some of them?
I don't know if Kiki's going to do any. He might. You know, I don't know.
Like, I know a lot of people covered Daniel Johnston's songs.
Yeah,
and that's how they originally got out.
Did you see that one of them is called, is it called Discovered Uncovered or Discovered Covered? Where he sings like 20 songs of his own onto just, you know, crummy little tape recordings, and then 20 famous people cover them. On the disc, it's a dual disc thing. Very clever, very cool. People like, you know, Matt Ward, M. Ward, people like Vic Chestnut. And,
well, you're talking about Kinky Friedman. There seems to be this whole stable of celebrities that have become your fan base. Everybody from Stan Freberg to Robin Williams to Gary Larson. And how did you get this great circle of admirers that just
show up? I don't
know.
You just find out. Tom Waits, like, runs my cartoons. I sent him my songs. And he sang one of my songs out of my answering machine, which is really fun.
Oh, that's got to be a fetish.
Yeah, it's like... Can I say he covered one of my songs when it's on my answer machine? Come on, give me the answer on that one.
Yeah.
Say it again.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this, John. I think originally you got national attention. You were sending cartoons to Bob Mucione, Penthouse, and Omni.
Mm-hmm.
And they were wondering why all the cartoons were about folks with handicaps.
Well, what happened was I was being accepted at Penthouse for years, and they were publishing my work. And then I sent them a cartoon that was autobiographical called the Light. It was like a 30-panel graphic, you know, short novel thing called what was it called? The Lighter Side of Being Paralyzed for Life. It was published in the Clinton Street Quarterly. So I sent them that, and the guy called it and said, "Well, what's all this? You know, why?" You know, it's just like, because I'm paralyzed. He said, "Well, he was sort of." Indignant. He said, "Why didn't you tell me years ago?" Because I said, "Well, why should I? What's so important about that?"
for being a cartoonist. I mean, you know.
Well, I suppose if you're an able-bodied cartoonist doing jokes about cripples, then it's not cool. But if you're handicapped yourself, it's politically correct.
That's why it's funny, because I remember, you know, you were in Chicago when my cartoons were in the Tribune. But I remember, you know, in all the years I've gotten hundreds and hundreds of angry letters from all around the world, and I've only just indulged myself one time to answer one of them, and in answering one of them. And then one of them was a nurse from Chicago, and she wrote, somehow the letter got to me, and she said, you know, how could you dare draw cartoons about handicapped people? Because she said, my brother's disabled. You'd never know the agony that he goes through. But I called Chicago, and I found a way of tracking her down. Some cab company was able to get the address, and I got her phone number where she worked and called her up at her place of work and explained very gently that I was the cartoonist Callahan, and I had drawn this cartoon, and responding to her letter. And I said, you know, I explained that I was indeed disabled myself. And it was a very sweet moment. I was nice and very gentle with her. It was her first time. Tonight I miss my Portland girl. Her sea-green eyes are 10-cent pearls. The lipstick smeared beyond her mouth in swirls of red like Minnie Mouse. And how she always looked insane, like you could save her from the rain. And you were caught between cartoons, her laughter and her schoolgirl tunes. But she would never sing for youth. The sisters beat her black and blue. She tried so hard to still those chimes, but there were just too many times. The rain has left its blood in puddles. The red lights flash, the colors muddle. I never knew the reason why. The red streaks always made me cry. Now it seems so clear I finally see the answer so untimely. The streets are lipstick shades and swirls. The lipstick of a Portland girl. Something like that. There's a bunch of other verses.
This was inspired by a friend of yours.
She died. Yeah, she died of cancer. But she had always put her lipstick on crooked. See, she looked mentally ill because her lipstick was always way outside the margins. It makes a girl look kind of cracked, you know. And so I thought it was really kind of cool. And then one night I went out after she was dead, and I saw the rain splashing in the puddles, and the red lights were flashing in the puddles like smeared lipstick, because the, you know, the streets are all wet. So, hence the song from Tumbling After.
Very cool.
Really all concerned.
That's a good way to say that you miss her.
Yeah.
It's cool. One of your favorite targets is Catholicism, and this was even before the altar boy scandals. What's so funny about Catholicism? It's a target for satire going back a long ways. Is it the costumes, the doctrine, the Inquisition, the rituals?
It's just such an intense way to be raised in the time I was raised, in the place I was raised, Catholic. The 8 years that I had, I write about in the book too a lot about nuns. Well, as a cartoonist,
right?
I was born in Portland and lived here until I lived out by the airport until I was about, I don't know, five. When I went to school in the Dalles at six, then went all the way to whatever, and then I moved to LA after that, high school. It's because it's the rich, intense way of being raised. So there's so many jokes. It imprints you so hard. Plus, you know, I had various deep problems that happened when I was in college. When I was in grade school and stuff that were very, very serious at the hands of one of the teachers. And I was a nine-year-old kid. It was a very intense situation where I was taken to the school for special, so-called special private sessions or work with her on Saturdays, and there was certain things that went on that affected me for life. So. But as far as the cartoons, I began drawing Catholic kind of oriented cartoons for Penthouse, and I got picked up by Penthouse. It feels like kind of a James Joyce experience where it just gets deep in your blood.
Well, here are these priests and nuns, and they're putting themselves forward as representatives of the divine, and that's pretty heavy for a kid who's just not yet come to terms with the world view that he's going to have later in life.
Yeah, ordinarily it wouldn't be such a bad way to be, raised. I think just there's a few people that fall into the category of the tragedies, you know, with the clergy there.
So you've had some great cartoons involving priests. One of them has a whole bunch of priests gathered around a giant cape, one of these ones that strippers will jump out of, but in this case it's an altar boy.
Yeah, it's a priest convention, and the altar boy's jumping out of the cake, you know.
Let's listen to your song, Goodbye Julietta. Tell us a little bit about this one.
It's a song, I don't really have anything special I meant by the song. It really doesn't mean anything. It's just, I like to write songs about goodbye.
Well, here it is.
They tear down the monument and putting up a tomb. They're rounding up the rodeo and dragging down the moon. They're going through your pockets too. There's nothing left to give. It's just that I'm alone tonight, remembering how you lived. Goodbye, Julietta. Goodbye, goodbye. The bells of the city are strong in the sky. The people are laughing, but it's only a lie. And all they are saying is goodbye, goodbye.
Saying that David Lynch is a cartoonist, which I'd forgotten about, and that people don't get his work a whole lot either. They don't see that there's a lot of humor in there.
Mm-hmm.
They're only seeing the scary stuff and thinking, oh, well, that's not my cup of tea. Maybe you can comment on that a little bit. I don't know if you've talked to him personally, but...
No, I never talked to David Lynch. I've always asked Gus Van Sant to introduce me to him. I don't know. I guess, to me, David Lynch is really all humor. It's all surreal... like an American surrealist or something. It's just completely... I remember, because I had a DVD for Blue Velvet, and I remember Isabella Rossellini, you know, she's her modern-day comments, present-day comments, and she's saying that David Lynch laughed all the way through the shooting of the rape scene, and she was surprised. And years later, she realized, you know, it really... I mean, that most people are so shocked. And the funniest thing about Blue Velvet is accidentally on purpose playing it for various people who are in my house, like somebody's in there for cleaning the place, or somebody's in there for visiting, or Aunt Matilda from, you know, Vancouver, BC is toddling in there with her cane, and suddenly you've got, you know, Dennis Hopper screaming at the party, remember, you know, or
Pabst Blue Ribbon,
you know,
Baby Wants Mommy, yeah.
It's just amazing how much people, I was in a restaurant the other day, because I said something about Blue Velvet, and we're talking about Dennis Hopper, and, you know, I mean, a cab driver said something, and about three different people at tables turned around with their hands over their faces and sort of simulate, you know, like a breathing mask. Like Dennis Hopper.
It's probably the funniest thing he's ever done.
But it was, you know, in the special effects, Dennis Hopper was saying that Lynch had written it in that was supposed to be the stuff that makes your voice high that you breathe.
Oh, yeah, nitrous oxide.
Yeah.
Well, nitrous makes it low. Oh, okay.
Well, the stuff that makes it high, well, whatever. No, nitrous oxide is what it was in reality. But what's the stuff that Dennis...
Helium. I guess, yeah.
Helium. And so Dennis Hopper thought the helium thing would be too silly, is what he said. So he changed it. David gave him permission to change it to the nitrous oxide, which he really did, I understand, sniff for real on the phone.
So getting back to Isabella Rossellini, she was offended at the time that was being shot. Is that what you're saying?
She was surprised that David would.
And then later she realized that it was
somewhat funny. She's a very brittle kind of commenter in this film. She's very vain. And she was saying how much she takes herself very seriously in the film. You could tell that she had to think a long time before she was nude and that kind of thing in the film. And she really wanted to do this and do that. You're an actress, just do the lines.
So do you think David Lynch was maybe trying to get a reaction out of her?
Well, I think, wasn't he going out, wasn't that his girlfriend for years, Isabella, wasn't it?
Gosh, I don't know. I think so, yeah. But what David Lynch makes me think of is this, David Lynch makes me think of Dark Northwest Winters.
Mm-hmm.
All of his work has this really brooding, deadpan quality of a wet, soggy winter and some of the strange, creepy stuff that may happen underneath the surface here in the Northwest.
Oh, that's, well, he's from Spokane, it said in the video. There's a wonderful documentary about him called Pretty as a Picture. And he's you always see him, he's sort of gesticulating, but he's always just very much in earnest. He's in the brows, and maybe he's explaining things. It's like, well, even though he's well-adjusted, kind of looking.
And well before he started doing films, he drew a comic, a weekly comic called The Angriest Dog in the World.
Yeah. It's very funny.
This is one thing we keep running into with this show, is that there aren't really separate barriers between comics and movies. They're actually pretty close companions. Orson Welles was talking about how he read a lot of comic books to get ideas for Citizen Kane, especially the storyboards before they actually shot it. And on the phone, too, we were talking about, I just happened to mention when we brought up David Lynch, that Hitchcock, Fritz Lang, and John Huston were all artists, visual artists, before they started being filmmakers. So it's hard to separate the two. They're still, they're making images, one just happens to be moving. And it seems like the more time goes by, the more you're either being acquainted with people that are they're well-known movie folks, or you're at least inspiring stuff on movies and television. And since we're on that subject, we lived in Portland for a while, we keep hearing over the years about the possibilities of them filming a biopic about you. Is that still something that's going to happen?
I think Robin Williams told me that he's not going to do that film now. But
that would be Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot.
Yeah, the book that I wrote, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, because Robin has kind of outgrown the part. The part takes place in my book when I'm in my 20s. Actually, I've outgrown the part. But I think it's, well, it's not, it definitely is on hold right now at Showtime, cable, Showtime, to be a series, I guess. So it's being written by a Pulitzer Prize winning guy.
How about Edward Norton?
For the part?
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's great. I love Edward Norton. He's great.
And of course, he did the local author, Chuck Flanick.
Did he play that?
Club.
Did he?
Didn't he do Fight Club?
Yeah, he did Fight Club. Yeah. Oh, that's it. Well, he was playing his part. Okay. Yeah. Huh.
Do you want to read a little bit of the intro of...
Yeah, sure. Show me the page and I'll read it.
Okay, let's give it a whirl here. Don't worry, we can edit anything.
Hold the light on it there. Okay. Chapter 1. On the last day I walked, I woke up without a hangover. I was still loaded from the previous night. It was 11 a.m., a hot July 22nd, 1972. I had no idea where I'd been the night before. Past experience told me I had an hour or so of grace before withdrawal symptoms set in. So I was a man of leisure. First thing, light a cigarette. Sounds like a Bukowski story, not mine. Everybody in the house was gone. I'd slept right through the taped mariachi music that Jesus Alvarado turned on every morning at 5:30 to pump himself up for another day of house painting. Music from a Taco Bell in hell. Alone, I could pad down the hall to the bathroom in the nude, making the sign of the cross in the toilet. Boy, I miss those days. With the stream of urine. A compulsion I hated but couldn't shake. Then I flushed and hopped into the shower. Even there, I had to smoke, holding the butt above the curtain with my left hand while I scrubbed the left side of my body with my right, then switching it over to my right hand so I could use my left to scrub my right side. It takes imagination to support a three-pack-a-day habit. Shaving, I checked myself out in the mirror. A big 6 foot, 3 inch, 21-year-old Irishman. Body hardened, scarring by work. Ruggedly handsome if you discounted a little acne scarring. Flaming red hair, not bad. No handicap with the girls. And a nice contrast to the creative artist, poet, and songwriter. Wow, is it songwriter back there? Hidden somewhere within. How much more? Can't we get
it? John, do you remember having a conversation with a fellow named Ernie Hood?
Who?
Do you remember
Ernie
Hood?
Hood?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember. Why do you say that?
Well, he's one of the co-founders of KABU back in 1968, and he was a real big fan of yours. He definitely related to your work because he was in a wheelchair due to polio.
Oh, and I know it is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he did a lot of interesting shows on KABU during his lifetime, and I'm friends with his son, Tom Hood, who's also produced a lot of radio on KABU, and his dad, Ern, had saved one of your cartoons that said, please help me, I'm not completely drawn.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Just, you know, anyway. He's somebody that was a big fan. I thought I'd mention that since KABU probably wouldn't really exist without his efforts back in the 60s.
I like him. I remember him as a very astute person.
Yeah, he's not with us anymore, but he thought you were the coolest, and I just thought I'd drop that name to you.
That's a really nice thing to say. Yeah, though I have people currently walking out of their houses and stopping their cars and telling me that they, introducing themselves and telling me their favorite new cartoons at Starbucks. One I did here recently with a giant guy at the rectal clinic. He's just a giant man, about 800 or 900 pounds, on his hands and knees, when the doctor's got the rectal scope in him, and the doctor's saying, "You're not going to believe this, Mr. Jones, but they've opened a new Starbucks up your ass." God, it's popular. I mean, it's almost as popular as this one I did, "Don't Be a Fool, Billy." Or
yeah. Can you describe that one? I was just looking at that this morning.
Well, he's a cowboy, you know. It was in Penthouse. I think two cowboys are facing off on the street. The one cowboy's normal, with his arms poised above his guns. The other cowboy's determined and got a pair of guns on, but he has no arm. He's an arm amputee. And so he's ready to sort of face off with no arms. And the girlfriend is screaming from the bar, "Don't be a fool, Billy." And I've seen people rip that line off on me and do different... In other words, I've seen people steal my cartoon and put a different image to that.
Now, obviously, you have some shortcomings when it comes to
sex.
That too,
not really.
Holding a pencil. You've come up with a very effective system for working it, and a lot of people think your stuff is better looking than, say, Dilbert. Here's another cartoon of yours. It's drawn so roughly that it's hardly discernible, and the character is saying, "That's the last time I let myself be drawn by an affirmative action cartoonist."
Yeah.
That seems to be you butchering your own sacred cows again, because obviously there are some people who say, "Well, let's get in the disabled cartoonist into our publication."
Yeah.
You know,
do they do that? I didn't know that. I never, you know, experienced that. I've always made the disability work for me as far as getting into publications, but, you know.
But, why not?
Well, it's a hard world, you know.
Was there a point where you just kind of were sick of being widely syndicated and you wanted to just take it over yourself? I remember Phil Frank did that once with Travels with Farley. He took it really private and inside and made it just a San Francisco
thing. Yeah, I guess I have that fault, but it's very unconscious when I do that. I don't realize that I'm doing that. Because now I find myself doing these sort of Renaissance bookstore cartoons, these sort of New Age spiritual cartoons, like I did one recently where it shows the schlubby husband reading the paper, ignoring the wife, and the wife is standing in the doorway. She's standing there, she's in the form of a rhinoceros, an actual rhinoceros, and she's saying...
That's Thurber-esque.
Yeah, it does. And she's saying to the husband, she's saying, "Honey, does this incarnation make me look fat?"
Yeah, you've been listening this morning to Words and Pictures on KABU with S.W. Conser and Bill Dodge, and we've been joined by cartoonist John Callahan. John, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Forget Stanley the cat. He's here giving himself a bath.
Stanley.
And we'll go out with another song by Mr. Callahan, "My Pit Bull Won't Be Left Alone."
My canary covers me with seeds, and my monkey separates my bees. My cat wrecks everything I own, and my pit bull won't be left alone.
Thanks for listening. I'm S.W. Conser. Tune into KABU Thursday morning, July 26th from 11:30 to noon to hear filmmaker Gus Van Sant talk about John Callahan and the new movie, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot.
My macaw sits silent as a stone, and my pit bull won't be left alone. You may see
you for being a part of our amazing community. It takes all of us to manage this great community resource, and the role played by the KBOO Board of Directors is essential. Here is an opportunity for you to join the KBOO Board and become part of the team that is guiding our daily work and representing the interests and visions of all our members. Please consider applying to become a KBOO Board member if you want to help serve our community and put your gifts and talents to good use. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month for all board members, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kboo.fm and fill out an application, or stop by the station to pick up a paper copy. The deadline to apply is July 20th, 2018. We are looking for folks who love KBOO, who are committed to our community, and want to carry forward KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change. KBOO needs you. Apply today.
KBOO Community Radio and the Jazz Society of Oregon are thrilled to present the 38th annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, July 20th, 21st, and 22nd at Cathedral Park in North Portland. The weekend starts with blues on Friday night. Norman Sylvester, Reggie Houston, and the Northwest Women Rhythm and Blues will be there. Saturday and Sunday will include Becky Kilgore, the Quadrophones, Tahira Memory, Randy Porter with Nancy King, the Ray Charles Review, and more. That's the 38th annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Portland's longest-running community event, July 20th, 21st, and 22nd, under the St. John's Bridge in North Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Shocks of Sheba is made possible by KBOO member listeners and supporters.